The first case on our calendar is 09-121 in the matter of the guardianship of John Spangler. Mr. Lieberman.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the Court. Dave Lieberman for the State of Ohio. I will be sharing time with Frank Hickman of the Geauga County Board of Developmental Disabilities. We'd like to reserve 2 minutes of time for rebuttal.
Your time there.
Your Honors, there are two issues in this case. First, the authority of the probate courts to supervise its court-appointed guardians. And second, the duty of the county boards to protect the health and safety of wards within its jurisdiction. I will address the first issue. Mr. Hickman will address the second. Under Ohio law, the probate courts have ultimate responsibility for the health and safety of wards like John Spangler. And consistent with that responsibility, the probate courts have the clear authority to review the suitability and the fitness of their court-appointed guardians.
Counsel, it didn't seem to me that there would be a lot of dispute about that. There doesn't seem to be much dispute about that in the Court of Appeals opinion, is there? It's all over the authority to what you indicate is the second issue.
Right, but the state is here also on the first issue, that the Court of Appeals completely ignored the authority of the probate courts to supervise its court-appointed guardians.
What I'm suggesting is I don't know that there's much debate about that.
Well, I think there is, Your Honor. The state's position here is that the probate court can receive pertinent information from a party about the fitness of a particular guardian, and it's up to the probate court's discretion about whether or not to review that information and ask the guardians for a response. So in this case, we have a county board delivering information to the probate court saying that the Spanglers may not
No, the county board did something more than that. They filed a formal motion.
That's correct, Your Honor.
That's beyond delivering information, and the Court of Appeals says there's a process for them to follow and a statute to follow. And I think that's all issue number two, but the inherent authority of the probate court doesn't seem to me that's in dispute.
I think it is, Your Honor, because the probate court has plenary power over all matters before it.
I'm suggesting you don't need to persuade us of that.
Let me ask a question that we might need persuaded on. Does the probate court, with its plenary power, have the authority to join somebody as a party to aid it in its determination?
Well, I should point out that issue was not appealed to the 11th District. That is separate from the issue here, which is whether or not in October of 2006 the probate court properly accepted the county board's motion and reviewed it and asked the Spanglers to respond. But as to your question, in October 2007, the probate court did join the county board as a party to this case.
Let me ask you a different question. Does the board have standing to file a motion in the probate court or not?
As to the October 2006 motion, the state does not believe that the issue of standing is at all relevant when we are dealing with a court's inherent authority to regulate and discipline the conduct of its own officers. The court-appointed guardian is an officer of the court. So just like an attorney in an attorney discipline case, any person that has pertinent information that an attorney has committed misconduct or is unfit to practice law can file that information in this court, and this court will investigate it.
Well, the court could even sua sponte on its own motion whether it's over at the coffee shop or wherever the judge learns that there should be some concern about the care of a ward, could institute that.
Exactly, Your Honor. So if the court can sua sponte ask the guardians to respond, it can certainly read a motion presented by the county board and find that the allegation is sufficiently concerning to ask, in this case, the Spanglers to respond. There was no abuse of discretion with that.
Mr. Lieberman, does the Santrusic case affect your position whatsoever on the issue of the standing of the type of motion that can be filed?
I don't think so, Your Honor. In Santrusic, the issue was a a woman who was not a party to the underlying case attempted to appeal, and the court's decision said, you should have taken steps to become a party in the court below. You didn't. You do not have standing to appeal. And I think this actually goes nicely back to Justice Cupp's question as to whether or not in April of 2007, the probate court erred in making the county board a party to this case. As I said at the outset, that issue was not appealed to the 11th District. But on the merits, the state does not believe that the probate court erred. We typically give considerable discretion to the probate courts on issues such as joinder and intervention. In this case, we had a county board presenting information to the probate court, allegations that the Spanglers were unfit to continue serving as guardians. The probate court made the county board party to this case to have a full airing of the issues. We want a full airing of these issues before the probate court so it can make an appropriate factual determination about what is in the best interest
counsel,
of the ward.
I would really suggest you get the other lawyer up here to discuss the issue that the Court of Appeals decided and that we're interested in. We don't dispute, I don't think, that the probate court has a lot of inherent power in this area. It's a question that they decided was a narrow question.
If the state's position is that if the probate court has inherent authority to receive the information, then everything that the probate court did here was consistent with the law, and that the 11th District was wrong to even import or reference the doctrine of standing to that. But in light of Your Honor's concern about the second issue, I will be happy to turn the podium over.
Well, it's your argument, counsel, so you do what you want.
Well, in that case, I thank the court for its attention. I'll turn the podium over.
Thank you, Mr. Lieberman. Mr. Hickman.
To answer the question that you're raising, Your Honor, the Court of Appeals in paragraph 62 said, and this is Justice O'Toole, that because the board had no authority to bring it to the court's attention, the court had no authority to enter the order. That's why that's a relevant issue. It says that in the it wasn't really a majority opinion, but the opinion of the...
But sometimes we agree with... the basic decision was that the board has no statutory authority to file the motion that they filed. That they have statutory authority to come to the court and say the plan isn't working. There's a specific statute on that, and I don't think the court said that if they filed the right motion and it got before the court, that then the court had no inherent authority to move forward. They simply said the board went beyond its statutory powers in the motion that they filed.
That was certainly an issue, a central issue.
Isn't that
and
what
I'd
they
be happy
said?
To address that issue.
Yeah. I mean, that's what that's the narrow issue before us. And then we have to deal with that. Are you saying they were wrong? And I guess you are. You argue that there's inherent authority for the board to file anything they want to.
That's not an unlimited power. In the circumstances of this case, you had a situation where a young man's health and safety was at risk. And in that circumstance, there is a statutory mandate for the board to act. They have to ensure, that's the statutory word, ensure health and safety.
Okay, and the Court of Appeals said there's a way to do that.
Right. So I guess there's two questions that deal with the board's authority. One is there authority to take an action which isn't specifically spelled out in the statute? And the second question is whether or not 512633 is the sole tool that boards have. I think those are the two central questions that we have to deal with here. And with respect to the second question, whether or not 512633 is the sole tool, that is an important tool. That is a tool which allows the board to carry out a certain set of functions, but nothing in the legislation suggests it's the only tool. And specifically, 512633 is part of the process where abuse and neglect is reported. And once abuse and neglect is reported, the board has to provide services that are essential to prevent further abuse and neglect.
Okay. Was the abuse and neglect here principally that the mother kept objecting to how her son was being handled?
That was part of it.
And so she was a thorn in the side of the board.
More than that, Your Honor.
Okay.
The pattern of interference was going on before, and I think it's important to note.
But the principal objection was that the people who provide the services felt that this young man needed to stay in the same situation, that he needed stability and not change, and the mother was asking for too much change. Is that?
It was more than that, Your Honor. The precipitating situation that led to the filing of the motion was the mother showing up drunk at the caretaker's house. She would apparently, according to the caretaker, sit for hours looking at. And then one night she came in smelling of alcohol, and he was a police officer, so presumably was aware of this, and acted in ways that the caretaker thought put John at risk.
Okay, but the Court of Appeals said when confronted with all of that, the proper method for the board to get before Judge Henry is to file this request under the statute for a change in his plan.
That is what the Court of Appeals said, and I think you put your finger on one of the major reasons why that's not an appropriate issue or appropriate tool. It's not the services that were the problem. It was the guardian's behavior that was the problem, ongoing and presenting an imminent
risk.
But
once you're there, as the Attorney General argues, the judge has an inherent power to say, oh, well, it seems like to solve this, I need to do something about the guardian. The judge could do that on his own, couldn't he?
Well, I think the judge certainly had authority to do whatever the judge thought was in the best interest of the ward. I think the issue I would urge the court to consider is that a board has a variety of situations that it's faced with, and 512633 is not the only way that it has to react.
Counsel, basically, there's author of the appellate opinion takes issue with the vehicle that was used to bring this problem to the within the sights of the probate court.
Precisely.
And this motion to remove is in the 11th District's mind more than just a notification that, court, you need to take a look at this Mr. Spangler's guardian and whether it's in the best interest of this guardian, or excuse me, this ward, to continue to have this guardian. And it's just a question, is this an appropriate vehicle to bring it before the court or not? And there's nothing in the statute that would preclude this method of notification, which is a motion.
Correct.
He could have done it with a letter.
That's also
correct.
Could
have done it with a telephone call. And it's not conclusive that there's going to be a change in the guardian here. That's the decision the court must make after there's a hearing and there's evidence that is presented to the court.
Precisely.
The motion is merely a notification.
Judge, there's a problem. That's
exactly.
Exactly what it's saying, and it's doing it with a caption instead of a simple address in the top. And for the Court of Appeals to say that was beyond the power of the board, I think, is not supported by the statute.
What would be the determination if the board had failed to bring a dangerous or a troublesome situation? They had knowledge, as they did in this situation, and failed to bring that to the court's attention. Is that not a breach of the duties of the board?
Absolutely, and that's what the court in Ridley said. You said in Ridley. The situation in Ridley was not exactly the same, but there was an individual who said, I don't want your services. And the worker said, okay, we're not going to serve you anymore. And the Court of Appeals found there was a common law duty, which has been found in other cases as well, but Ridley is the one that faced it most squarely. And the failure of the board was a breach of the duty. Now, there was immunity for the board, but the workers involved did not get that immunity, and they were held liable in that case. So if the board had said, well, we don't think 512633 works because it's for a different problem and it's got an inherent limit. You can't get relief beyond a year. So we're not going to do anything. They would have been faced with a potential tort case. And
isn't there a broader issue here? It's not just the question of bringing it to the attention of the judge. But when you did it by motion, the board then became a party to the case. Is that really the gist of the problem here? That if it would have been done by letter or something else, it's a sort of a different situation than if you become the party, the advocate for it. I guess we'll find out in a minute if that's what they believe is the problem.
Well. The board was involved in this case for months before this issue came up. The board supported Mrs. Spangler in her bid for a guardianship in the first two hearings where the board appeared. And the board filed the motion. The Spangler's counsel stipulated to the fact that the Spanglers would be removed and that the Advocacy and Protective Services would be placed as guardian. They stipulated. The board was there. There was not only no objection, but a stipulation to the relief that the board was asking. The board was in this case.
So by the time of this hearing that's bringing this case here, the board was already a party.
It was not a formal party. That ruling was made in April of the following year. The motion was filed in January. To make them a party, but the participation of the board was open, considerable, and they stipulated to allowing the board to get the relief the board was asking for.
So it's
a de facto party.
You were participating as a party, whether you were a formal party or not.
Precisely.
But isn't that the problem that we saw in Santrusic? I mean, the idea that you needed to be the individual there, the daughter who was not a party, had never filed a motion to intervene, and we found there was no standing. Here, it seems that we've kind of switched the situation. You're saying the motion was filed by the board, and it was not made a party until later, when if it were just the opposite, we'd have no difficulty here. If the board had filed or had been made a party to the case and then filed the motion to remove the guardian, it seems that there'd be no question of standing.
I think the participation of the board established a level which amounts to standing, except for the formal ruling that the court made later that they would be an official party.
So do you think your position affects the Santrusic holding at all?
I think the Santrusic holding, it actually had... The main holding, in your opinion, was that because she was not a party at the lower proceeding, she could not appeal.
Right.
Who has the right to file an appeal? That's not an issue in this case. John appealed. He certainly has the right, and the board came on as had been a party at that point and has an interest in the case. So the appellate standing is not a question that anybody's raised.
So in your view, an interested entity may file a motion with the probate court.
Absolutely.
Without being a party.
I think, and that's what's different about the probate statute, that an interested party is recognized as an entity which has some basis for the court to pay attention to. It's similar, as the state of Ohio mentioned in their briefs, to disciplinary counsel proceedings, where anybody can go in and file something against an officer of the court. It's different. The statute for probate proceedings talks about interested parties doing certain things.
And it uses the word party, though. That's
interested persons is the word. It's not party. Right. People who have an interest. That's how the statute frames it.
And counsel, isn't it also true in probate proceedings that if there is a preclusion of someone being involved, that is also clearly spelled out. In other words, who's eligible to be a guardian, who's eligible to be an executor or a fiduciary in an estate. There's certain parameters that they're very clear that these are the only people that can hold these positions. So when they mean to make definitive characterizations or categories of people, it's spelled out in the probate code.
Yes, and I will say that the code does not specifically permit an interested party to file a motion to remove. The statute does not say that. An interested person can do a number of things that the Court of Appeals laid out. And I think one of the questions is whether or not the absence of that specific authority precludes an entity like the board, which has a specific statutory duty to come forward and will be held liable if it doesn't come forward, if it precludes the board from saying to the court in an official way, there's a problem. And if you can say it with a letter, the fact that it has a caption on it should make no legal difference, particularly when the board, from the very beginning of this case, was involved at the parents' request.
You've used your time, Mr. Hickman.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Ms. Schoberg-Witt.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, I represent John Spangler, and I will be sharing argument time today with counsel for Joseph and Gabrielle Spangler. In evaluating this case, there's a couple of three important principles to keep in mind. First of all, the county board is a government agency. It's created by statute, and its role is to provide services to individuals who consent to receive those services.
Counsel, excuse me, can you pull that mic up closer to your...
Is this better?
Better, much better.
Okay.
Yes, thank you.
Before you go on, I pushed Mr. Lieberman on the issue that I thought was conceded, or certainly my view would be that this court sees the probate court as having broad powers. Do you dispute that, that the probate court could have even initiated this on its own?
Certainly the probate court is a superior guardian and can take action sua sponte. That is true. It's also a court of law, and when it's presented with a motion that's improper and has the party has no statutory authority to bring it, it should, in accordance with the law, dismiss that motion.
But the Court of Appeals really is sending this back and suggesting they just come in with a different motion, the one that they're statutorily authorized to file of saying this plan isn't working, and you're right back where you started.
Well, under the process in 512633, if the board believed that there was abuse and neglect that needed to be addressed, it should have first of all investigated that and spoken directly with John Spangler, because under that statutory process, he can consent to services even without the guardian if there's a need for those type of protective services. That didn't happen. Then if that is unable to happen and they're still concerned that there's a risk of harm, then they can file a complaint with the probate court asking for a court order to order services.
You object to them being a party?
Yes.
At all?
Yes.
And is the problem there in a larger sense, moving beyond your client, are you advocating or presuming to advocate on behalf of all people with special needs that the agency that is responsible for providing those needs should not be a party, but should be more of a disinterested witness and providing expert advice and testimony to the court, and should never be a party?
Certainly, if they filed a complaint under 512633, they'd likely be treated as a party. That might be one circumstance. But as a general rule, they shouldn't be a party to a guardianship proceeding per se. There's no interest that the board has in who is someone's guardian. Their only interest is in providing services.
What happens if the guardian is impeding the provision of those services? You say they still have no interest?
If they're impeding the services to the extent that it's causing a situation of potential abuse or neglect, and neglect is very broadly defined as failing to provide care when there's a duty to do so, then there is a process. They can do the investigation, speak directly to the individual that's subject to the guardianship, try to obtain consent and set up a plan that way through 512631. If that doesn't work, then they can go to the probate court and seek to get a court order. But consent is the basis for them providing services, and they can only override that consent.
Consent is the basis to provide services to the ward.
Correct.
Consent by the ward.
Well, in a situation where someone has a guardian, then the guardian can provide consent.
The guardian
consent.
Has to be the consenting entity there, not the ward.
That is true as a general rule, but 512631, if there is a situation of potential abuse and neglect, the individual, even if they have a guardian, can consent to services.
If they have the
directly.
Capacity to do so.
Well, even if they have a guardian, they can do so.
I know, but they may not have the capacity.
And then that would be the reason that 512633 was created in order to allow the probate court to intervene and order services.
You keep focusing on services, and you keep talking about the guardian's right or the ward's right to services. And I don't see that as an issue in this case. I see the lack of the guardian's ability to do their job as the issue. So what does a ward do when there's a guardian that is not performing? What rights does the ward have? You keep talking about the ward can do this, the ward can do that. What does the ward do? Let's focus on that first, and then I want to talk about what the agency can do.
Well, certainly, if John Spangler had a problem with the manner in which his parents were making decisions as guardians for him, he has the right to go to the probate court and bring that to the court's attention and either ask for instructions to the guardian or a new guardian.
Okay. That now, if the agency that's providing services sees some major issues with the guardian, not services, but the guardian and how the guardian's behaving, what do you say again the guardian should do? I mean, the agency should do?
Well, the agency doesn't have a role in deciding between a guardian and individual.
So they ignore the situation? They don't?
Unless it reaches the statutory threshold of
okay, let's say they
harm.
Say, got a person showing up drunk, very concerned about their care of this kid, reaches, in our mind, the risk level. Now what do they do?
Then they should have followed the process under 512631 and 33 to attempt to set up services that could be either consented to.
No. They're not concerned about services. They're concerned about the guardian. What do they do about the guardian? I want to get away from services. You keep going back to services. Services aren't an issue. What do they do about the guardian? When they've investigated, they determine there is at risk. What do they do about the guardian?
Well, the board doesn't have a role vis-a-vis guardians, and specifically that would be the probate court's role. They
How does
only
the probate
have
court find out about that if the provider of the services, not in connection with providing the services, but by observation and information received about the drunkenness and the disruption and the agitation that's prevalent with this ward, they make the court aware of it, correct?
Well, if there is an issue of abuse and neglect, they certainly have the ability to report that, to investigate, report to law enforcement, and that may include the probate court. But they don't have the authority to go to the probate court through the county prosecutor, file a motion, actively interject itself into a guardianship proceeding, and basically determine what's going to happen by forcing then John Spangler and his parents to defend against the case they've now presented.
And that's not protecting, that's not being concerned about the risks to the guardian. They're just supposed to wash their hands of the guardianship issue. I mean, you're basically saying they don't have any rights to do anything about the guardianship issue. Well, they can talk to law enforcement. How do they get it to the probate court's attention? It is not services, but a guardian. How do they get it to the court's attention, in your opinion?
Well, I see my time is up, and I want to pass it over to counsel but to briefly answer that. They would have to follow the process under 512633.
Which is what?
Which is filing a complaint saying there's abuse and neglect, and they weren't able to obtain the consent they needed to have the services to address that abuse and neglect. And it does come back to services because that is the board's role.
Okay, so you're basically saying they have no role in actually trying to get rid of a guardian. They have to define it as you're somehow preventing services. And if they're not preventing services, you're essentially saying they have no role whatsoever.
That's correct.
Okay. I hear you going even further, saying that they're forbidden from doing it.
They would have no statutory authority.
Forbidden from bringing this information to the probate court. That's a pretty strong point of view, isn't it?
They certainly don't have any statutory authority to file the motion and act as a party that they did here.
Well, they have no authority is one thing, but the implication is that then they are prohibited from doing it. Is that your argument?
And as a government agency, you do need to check overreaching by them, and that would have been the probate court's role.
So that is your argument?
Correct.
Thank you, Ms. Schoberg-Witt. Ms. Mikowski.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Mr. Chief Justice, Justices of the Supreme Court. I'm Pamela Walker-Mikowski, and I'd like to just pick up where we left off. What can they do? They could file an MUI and have it investigated, a major unusual incident report. I'm too short. They could file an MUI, a major unusual incident report, have that investigated. There are a number of ways that this incident itself could have been addressed, not by the filing of a motion to remove a guardian.
So, Ms. Mikowski, since you're following up, do you agree that the board is forbidden, as Justice Kupp has just asked, forbidden from bringing this to the probate court's attention in any other way other than through the statutory process you're talking about?
You know, I like to stray away from big, broad issues like that, because maybe there is a way. If I was a really creative lawyer and reviewed the statutes, I can tell you, though, this way was completely wrong and was not the proper way. Filing the motion for removal of the guardian under these circumstances was not appropriate. The board had no authority to file a motion for removal of a guardian. If the board's decision was that we have to get rid of this guardian because this guardian is interfering with our ability to provide, and I apologize, Justice Longberg, but to provide services, which really they're the fiscal agent to provide the services. That's their role here. However, if they felt that Mrs. Spangler, and by the way, Mr. and Mrs. Spangler are present here in the front row, and I just want to take a moment to introduce you to them. If the court did feel that Mrs. Spangler on this one occasion when she showed up drunk was a problem, then they could have filed an MUI, which is the process that you file whenever there's an unusual incident in the care of a person who's in this process.
What about if there's an ongoing observation of disruption and interference, whether, you know, we have this one incident that we're constantly alluding to, but also I believe that there was the allegation that there was a very strained relationship and the presence of the guardian agitated the ward, and it was just an ongoing bad situation for the demeanor, I think, of the ward here. And, okay, that's not just one unusual major, you know, incident. This is a progressive, and a progressive series that apparently the agency had witnessed.
Right. That's what they would like you to believe. If we review the actual evidence, though, the testimony was that services were being provided. The testimony was that when Mrs. Spangler was present with John, she was able to keep him calm. The testimony was that John had a violent outburst disorder and that there was no specific thing that triggered that. The testimony was
yet
that
the probate court granted changed guardians here.
The probate court changed guardians on an ex parte paper motion with an affidavit that asserted absolutely nothing about the risk. In fact, if we look at the motion,
I thought there was an extensive hearing. I thought 2 or 3 days.
No, well, on October 26th, the court granted an ex parte motion to remove. And then we showed up in court a few days later, and contrary to what counsel indicated, I'd never stipulated that we would agree to the temporary removal. I said, we'll continue today's hearing, allow the temporary guardian to stay in place. This will just continue the temporary guardianship and gives them an opportunity to either defend on the motion, them meaning my clients, or whatever else they may be able to resolve. So we never gave up on the issue. We simply continued the hearing. So then the hearing was continued until April. We filed our motion to remove because we were concerned about decisions that the new guardian was making or failing to make on behalf of the ward. And at this point, we're in a brand new territory now and with a process that isn't spelled out in statute. And I just did the best I could as a lawyer. Okay, if they can file a motion, why not we? And that's the point when the court set it for a hearing. The hearing occurred. This is exactly why this is what's wrong with this case. So the hearing occurred on April 24th. I wrote these dates down because my memory is bad, but I believe then in June, and then a couple days in June and a day in July 2007. And then August, 10 months later, the ward is interviewed by the court, and then there's a decision. So the difference is that if the probate court felt that it was necessary to remove the guardian, they could have followed the procedure under 2109.24, which simply says that you give 10 days notice, and then we have a little hearing, and that would have, in my opinion, and I don't do an extensive probate practice, but that would probably have been a more informal situation with a magistrate where the magistrate or the judge would say to the guardian, this is what happened, what do you think? And then at that point the court could say, okay, well, stop doing that, and that's how we're going to behave, and I'm going to keep you on as the guardian. Or the court could say, well, if you're not willing to cooperate and understand that I'm the superior guardian, then I'm removing you.
Counsel, I want to cut through. We have these procedural issues
right.
The Court of Appeals dealt with that you're raising. I don't think there's any dispute between the sides as to the inherent powers of the probate court to ultimately resolve issues of appropriateness of a guardian.
Absolutely.
All right.
But that doesn't say that there's not a procedure that has to be.
I understand that. Now, is your insistence on the procedure, I assume your focus is just on these people, but I want to deal with, I guess, the larger question. This is an agency that provides vital and important services to people in our society who have profound disadvantages and problems. Is it your view from dealing with this case that the agency that provides these services should never be a party in disputes about guardianships because with many families, there are going to be disagreements about the level of service and whether or not their loved one is receiving enough services or appropriate services, and that those disputes may go on over a lifetime of the ward. Is it your view in a more global sense that the agency should never come in, and that's why you're insisting that that the agency cannot point to a specific statute that allows them to file the specific motion that they filed, and therefore they should be gone?
I'm not saying the agency should never come in. They can come in under the complaint process if they feel strongly that services are not being provided. That's clear. The other thing is they can come in as a witness. And just 4 months before this, they, in fact, were witnesses and said that Mrs. Spangler would be a good guardian and that, you know, they were working with her. So they have a role, but the question is, can they file this motion to remove? And the answer to that has to be no, because there's nothing expressly set forth in the statute. If they have the power to file this motion, then Job and Family Services can file a motion in a private custody case because they feel that the amount of child support being collected isn't enough for someone who's receiving services from them, or the Bureau of Workers' Comp can file a motion in a case because someone is receiving services from them and they don't like where the case is going. If we open up the door, we're saying to all Ohioans, if an agency is supposed to be providing services to a group of people, then now they have a right to step into courtroom proceedings and create a very litigious...
Counsel, not necessarily. When the court hears the superior guardian, in the situations you're talking about, there is not a statutory superior guardian in the probate situation.
Right, but that doesn't make a difference as far as the procedure. The fact is that this court brought this case in to address the powers of the board itself to file the motion. At least that was my understanding. And even though the...
File the motion in probate court.
In probate court.
That's important. The court we're in front of, or that you and your clients are in front of, that's important here.
It absolutely. But, however, the way that the proposition of law has been stated in the brief by the appellants, it's whether or not they have the authority and duty to request the probate court to take action to protect health and safety and welfare of the citizens of Ohio. It's very broad. They're asking you to give them authority to step in on behalf of me.
Counsel, let's say for a moment that we adopt your
answer question.
Point of view in the find that the board does not have authority to file a motion to ask for a guardian to be removed. And as applicable to this case, would you then, so what's the consequence of that? The probate judge should ignore the information that was brought to him, even though it was improperly, or should the probate judge then say, well, you're not a party, but I need to investigate this and find out what's going on, and we can have a hearing and make a determination.
This is where we need a time machine so we can step back 3 years, but we can't do it. I think that if this court rules appropriately that the board was wrong to be and had no legal authority to file this, I think that the matter gets, first of all, remanded to the Court of Appeals. Well, I'm sorry, if they say it's wrong, if you disagree with the board, then it goes back to the probate court. And I think that the probate court, because we don't have that magic time machine of necessity, will have to look at the situation today as it stands today.
Why would it not simply be harmless error? They should not have done it, but they did. And so the information is before the probate court. The probate court has an obligation and authority to supervise the guardians and had a hearing on it. Maybe there were some, you know, missteps along the way with the emergency, but had a hearing on it, made a decision. Now the issue that's still before the Court of Appeals, as I understand, is whether the probate court's judge's decision was against the manifest weight of the evidence. So there's still that issue hanging up. Why don't we just go back to that now? If there's a ruling that says that the board has no authority to file a motion, and then this case goes back and the Court of Appeals determines whether or not the ruling was on the substance was correct or not.
I understand that that would be the outcome if we don't prevail in this matter. However, the problem is that you can only – harmless error means that one thing went wrong and it didn't change the outcome, and we are not able to predict that. If the thing that went wrong is that this agency was made a party and created this whole litigious situation – subpoenaing witnesses, doing discovery, cross-examination. We cannot predict. It's not one little thing that happened. It's not a ruling on a matter of evidence.
Are you suggesting that if probate court had been advised by a letter from a credible person with the same information, that the probate court would not have engaged in the same process it did here?
Right. It would not have engaged in this process. That's absolutely correct.
Wouldn't have had a hearing, wouldn't have had depositions or whatever, as you indicated, wouldn't have done that. We can't assume that, can we?
I would assume that if the probate court received information and the probate court was concerned about the situation, that the probate court would at a minimum have called some kind of a status conference to investigate the situation and then would have established a procedure that would be appropriate. The difference here is that this train was totally driven by the board and not by the court. Once a motion was filed, the court was obligated to deal with the motion. And so they were obligated to rule on the motion, have a hearing on the motion, you know, whatever necessary to deal with it. So it was being driven by the board's action. The board did not have the authority to file this motion, and
argument seems to be that the filing of the motion created an adversary process whereby the probate court, just being advised by a credible source, perhaps would not have been an adversary process. Is that your...
Right. It may not have been adversary, and it might not have been as protracted.
Looked at another way, what you're suggesting is that this avenue of information should be closed off to the probate court.
No, I'm not suggesting that the information... I guess maybe you're right. The avenue doesn't exist. It's not that the avenue needs to be closed off. We're not asking you to say they're not allowed to do something that they're allowed to do.
You are saying, though, that they should not be allowed to do this.
Right. There's a lot of looseness.
Are you saying that because it's not in the statute or they don't have standing to do that? Or are those the same questions?
They're different questions, but I'm saying both.
You're saying both?
Both.
And that's because the board uses the authority and the power of the prosecutor's office and the finances to carry on this litigation.
Right.
For
basically, they followed a procedure that you're probably more familiar with in termination of parental rights cases, where Children's Services comes in, does an ex parte motion to remove the children. I mean, that's exactly what happened, and then 3 days later, there was a hearing. This is a complete mimicking of the Children's Services. So the General Assembly is perfectly capable of setting up that process if that's what the General Assembly wishes to do, but it didn't.
They just haven't done that.
They didn't do it, and therefore this board does not have that authority. You know, the counsel for the board indicated that they rose to a level of standing, even though they didn't actually have standing, that there was stipulations that didn't have, you know, it's all very loose. And a statutory agency in a statutorily formed court should not be this loose. There are procedures, there are processes. There's no question that the probate court, as a superior guardian, needs to be concerned about the welfare of its ward, and if this information was brought to it, it has vehicles to deal with it. The problem is that we create a costly, litigious, and adversarial process out of this that is totally inappropriate for the situation, and most importantly, for which the board had no authority to pursue.
Thank you, Ms. Mikowski.
Thank you, Your Honor, and thank you for the additional time.
Mr. Lieberman and Mr. Hickman, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. I think the central point is that boards are supposed to provide services, but that's not all that they're supposed to provide. They have a very clear mandate to ensure health, safety, and welfare. That's not a service issue. That's why 512633 is not the only remedy.
Why wouldn't the purposes of the board be served just as well by a letter to the probate court raising questions about the guardian and suggesting the probate court investigate it?
A letter would have worked.
And then be a witness to the proceedings. Why would not work just as well?
A letter could have accomplished that purpose. A letter is a motion with a cap. Or, I mean, a motion is a letter with a caption on it. The form of it should be irrelevant. The point is, and I think counsel was quite candid and saying, we have no business even talking to the probate court unless services are an issue. That's where the argument leads you.
But the board was a party, Mr. Hickman. And they were driving it through the offices of the prosecuting attorney.
The board.
It's far more than being an informant through a letter saying we think you should look at this. They were actually the party in the case.
I think the fact that you file a motion does not mean you drive anything. The probate court could have dismissed that motion instantly. Could have said it's improperly given. I don't care. But somebody had to bring it to the court's attention.
I think you missed Justice O'Donnell's point. It's one thing to bring it to the attention. It's another thing to issue subpoenas and sort of drive the process. Trust you see that distinction?
Yes, I understand that point. And the motion to bring the court, the board in as a party was filed in January. The emergency motion was filed in October, late October. The motion to bring the board in as a party, officially as a party, was filed in January, and it was approved in April. So I don't think that there was anything that happened. I know there was nothing that happened between October and April that was any different from what a letter would have caused.
Well, counsel, one of the triggers here, based on reading of the appellate court's decision, is that on October 25th, 06, there was a motion to remove filed because they were concerned about Gabrielle, who is Mrs. Spangler, I presume, expressed intention to remove John from the home of the caregivers, which is not and then the trial court granted the motion the same day and appointed APSI as John's temporary guardian. There seems to me that the allegation that this ward was going to be removed from the court-sanctioned setting was the urgency here to get this and maybe take it out of the realm of, court, you need to inquire about the, through a letter, as opposed to setting up a situation where the court would take testimony and do an appropriate on-the-record investigation here.
The action in October was caused by the possibility of removal, but also the behavior which the caretaker said put John at risk. And the caretaker said, I'm finished with this. I don't want to deal with this woman anymore. So there was an imminent question about where this young man was going to go.
Counsel, this is has no bearing on the legal issues here, but we hear these cases. We're dealing with important legal issues that apply to everyone with these issues across the state. But how's John doing today?
My understanding, he's doing very well. He's in a stable situation. The behavior is under control, and
as the record showed, he's happy with it. Are the parents able to visit him?
Yes, as far as I know. In conclusion, we ask that the Court of Appeals decision be reversed.
Thank you, Mr. Hickman. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.